Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hey, everybody. I am back from New Orleans, and welcome to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. And it's been such a day-to-day in the markets, I don't even know where to begin talking. But again, let me just give out the basic information. This is Wall Street Unspun. We do the show live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. It can be heard on my website, www.europac.net. And also on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz. Oh, I just happened to log on to the screen, and it looks a little bit different. I don't know what kind of changes have been made here. Hopefully there's some kind of improvement. We'll find out. But anyway, I'm on my site. The number to call, toll-free, is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. The lines are open, so especially if anybody is calling from New Orleans. The New Orleans Investment Conference, I just returned. I got off the plane. I got home about an hour ago. But the conference is still going on. It has even tomorrow. It's not over yet. So if there's anybody still in New Orleans that was there that wants to call, that'd be great if you want to call from the hotel and talk about what you thought of the conference. Once again, the promoters of the conference really underestimated my appeal. They give me a room, and it's much smaller for my workshop, and it's overflowing, and there's standing room only, and then I end up losing people who would like to hear me, but they end up going into other rooms that are larger just because there's a space to sit, even though there's no way to get into my room. And, of course, it was it was very hot in there because, everybody was there and there wasn't a lot of air. Also, we had a pretty well-attended, client-only/Euro Pacific Capital friends meeting in the morning. So if you didn't get down to New Orleans, we're going to do another one of these client-only meetings. I'm, at the Orlando Money Show. I think it's in late January or early February. And, of course, we'll be doing the New Orleans conference again next year. It's always the same time. And so if you didn't get to come down this time, I try to make a point of coming down. I always have a good time in New Orleans. I have fun going out. It's a nice a little town to visit. I look forward to seeing people next year who could not make it this year. The big news that came out today, of course we had so much big news. We started with the housing numbers, which, another big drop. The big drop is always more than expected. I don't know when these guys are going to start to realize that the news is going to keep getting worse on housing. The inventory of unsold homes is now at 10.5 months nationwide. Of course, it's even higher than that because all the cancellations from the new homes that were purchased but canceled are not included in the official inventory statistics. So if they were, who knows, we'd probably be at a level of 1 year or more right now in unsold homes, and I expect the inventory to rise to 2 or 3 years. It's going to be unprecedented how many homes are for sale, and of course nobody will be buying them. Also, we got some news. Oil prices shot up again today because of some weak inventories. And I think the biggest news of the day, and again, it's still just the tip of the iceberg, is Merrill Lynch took an $8 billion charge and wiped out all of their earnings, just like I predicted. And, of course, the losses are going to be much more than $8 billion, and it's not just Merrill Lynch. It's anybody who was involved in these securitized mortgage products. When is Wall Street going to wake up to the reality that trillions of dollars of money that was loaned to American homeowners is never going to get paid back. I mean, why would anybody pay this money back? The houses that they bought are worth a fraction. You know, the other news, you know, Countrywide, which is on its way to bankruptcy, you know, closed, broke down to new lows, I think around 13.5. Countrywide announced that they're going to be restructuring many of these subprime mortgages that are about to mature, and they're about to reset at higher rates. Well, why are they going to restructure them? Because they can't foreclose. What people are finding out is the recovery rates on foreclosed properties right now is less than 50 cents on the dollar. So Countrywide has no choice. They can't foreclose. All they can do is go to the lenders, the borrowers, and try to work out a deal so the borrowers can keep paying, which means they're going to have to, you know, dramatically reduce their interest rates. They're going to have to reduce the principal at which the rates are, you know, apply. But in any event, people who own these homes are going to see significant reductions in their mortgage payments, and the losses are going to come from the lenders, which is what I've always said, that the main losses are going to be from the lenders. And wait until the average American figures this out. You know, when most Americans understand that they have all the cards, the homeowners, the lenders are in so much trouble. Because under normal circumstances, you don't make your mortgage payment, the lender can take your house. He can foreclose and take your house and take all your equity. But you know what? When you have no equity, when you bought with nothing down, or the house is worth less than the mortgage, you don't have to worry about it. Who cares if they foreclose and take your house? It's a liability for you. Who cares if someone takes your liability? Just go rent something else. You know what's going to happen? The borrowers and the homeowners are going to realize that all they have to do is stop making their mortgage payments, and their lenders are going to come on bended knee begging them to accept more favorable terms on lower mortgages. And this is not just going to be subprime. This is going to be everybody with a mortgage is going to figure out that all they have to do is not pay. Because the lenders have no recourse. They can't do anything. When you have a $1 million mortgage on a $500,000 house, what can the lender do? All they can do is restructure the loans. And now that Congress is basically removing the only impediment to this, which is treating a debt forgiven debt as taxable income. Once they sign that bill, foreclosures or defaults on mortgages is going to be a new national trend, and just about every single American homeowner is going to partake in the bonanza. And Wall Street, the investment banks, the mortgage lenders are going to lose trillions, right? Not billions. It's going to be an absolute fortune that they're going to lose because they funded this speculative mania. They let people buy houses with no down payments, giving them riskless gambles, and basically putting all the cards in the hands of the borrower, because the borrower can say, I'm going to walk away unless you reduce my mortgage, and there's nothing the lenders can do but agree, because they can't foreclose, because they can't sell. There's no equity in the homes. There's no market for them. And no one has figured this out. You know, I emailed out to my entire database today, and if you haven't seen this video, it's on my website. I emailed the YouTube. Somebody posted it up on YouTube, so I emailed the YouTube link so that people would watch it on YouTube. But I did an interview on Fox, Cavuto on Business, on part of the Cost of Freedom. I think it was on August 17th, and they asked us to pick stocks. And Ben Stein picked Merrill Lynch, the stock that collapsed today. And not only did Merrill Lynch announce these huge earnings, but S&P downgraded their debt, all right? And when this guy, Ben Stein, recommended the stock, it was around $76. Now I think it's around $63. I mean, it's gone way down, you know, even though the stock market has gone up. And when he recommended it, you know, and then another guy agreed, Tom Payne, yeah, I like the financials. And then there was a woman there, she likes them too, and she recommends Goldman Sachs. So three other people are all saying how the financials are great buys. I'm the only one that's saying that these guys are nuts. And I'm trying to explain to these people that these companies have no earnings. And Ben Stein is screaming at me that they have incredible earnings. And I'm saying, Ben, the earnings are going to disappear. They have losses going forward. These companies are going to have huge write-downs. And this is just the beginning for Merrill Lynch. They got more losses to come. And you know what? Then they're going to have the lawsuits from all their customers who they screwed. And then they're going to have the fines from the SEC and the NASD. I mean, it's going to be a nightmare. These companies are going to lose money for years as a result of this. And you got to watch this video, because these guys, it's incredible how it doesn't dawn on them. I mean, you think I'd get a phone call from Ben Stein now? Say, gee, Peter, I'm sorry. Oh, my God, I can't believe how right you were. Gee, I really wish I would have followed your advice. You know, it's just amazing. And I'm sure the next time I go on Fox, I mean, every time I go on there, they act like I don't know what I'm talking about. Like they're hearing this stuff for the very first time. And the same people that constantly are wrong are the people that seem to get all the respect. But you gotta watch this video. And, you know, I sent out the email because I want people to email it to their friends and encourage their friends to email it. Because we gotta get this stuff out there so the public understands that people who are portrayed as experts don't know anything about what they're talking about. And that these problems are real and they're easily forecastable. These are not shocks. Nobody should be surprised by this stuff. Man, all I keep hearing is, oh my God, this is shocking. You know, no, it's not. I mean, it shouldn't be shocking to anybody. You know, Merrill Lynch, you know, they admitted, and they had a big confession today, and they basically admitted they screwed up, they underestimated these problems, they didn't hedge properly, they made all these mistakes. Now, I wonder how much all these high-priced Merrill, you know, guys are getting paid tens of millions of dollars a year to give out this lousy advice. All they had to do is spend $16 to buy my book on Amazon, and they would have known exactly what was going to happen, and they would have known what to do. You know, it's unbelievable. So you got to watch those videos and forward them to as many people as you can. And I'd like to see if we can get like a little bit of a phenomenon on that YouTube and get that YouTube video to be more popular. And especially given what happened. I mean, it's just amazing. And I can't even describe it to you. You just got to watch the video because you wouldn't even believe it until you actually see it. You know, I didn't get to do Fox today because I was in the airplanes. That's why I wasn't on today. And yesterday they screwed up and I tried to let them know that I was in Central Time, but they picked me up an hour late. And so I missed, you know, almost the whole show. And then what happened is the fires in California, you know, preempted a lot of the coverage. So I barely got to be on, although I did do the Cavuto show at 6 o'clock. So I ended up doing that one. So I got some extra time. I don't know if you didn't see that show. I didn't post it on my website, you know, the fact that I was going to be on because it was a last minute thing. I agreed to do it. But I'm sure that they did record it. So we will post it up on my website. You know, probably, you know, later on today or tomorrow. Hopefully more households are getting Fox. I will be on CNBC tomorrow at 12 o'clock, Power Lunch. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm not really sure what the topic is going to be, but I haven't done CNBC for a couple of weeks. I think they're a little bit upset that I'm doing all this Fox, but I think they'll get over it, and I think I'll be able to keep doing the CNBC. Apparently, there's like a lot of rivalry going on, but the guys at Fox, these producers at Fox, really, really like me, so I'm going to be doing a lot more Fox. Also, if you went to see me on Glenn Beck, they had to cancel that last minute. Again, I think that was also due to the California fires. You know, by the way, you know, if anybody starts talking about these fires as if somehow it's going to help the economy. Again, this is more of this nonsense, the broken window fallacy. It doesn't help the economy to have to borrow money, which is what we're going to do, borrow more money from the Chinese and the Saudis to rebuild houses that were already there. We had them before. So as a result of the fires, you know, we're going to have our same houses back, but we're going to owe billions more in debt to the rest of the world. You know, and they talk about how resilient our economy is. They're saying, oh, we can withstand this just the way we withstood Katrina. Our economy didn't withstand Katrina because we haven't paid for it yet. We borrowed the money to rebuild New Orleans. We just put it on our national credit card. We've been postponing the costs of all these natural disasters. Believe me, one day the cost is going to come back like a tsunami all by itself, and we're really going to see how much it costs. You know, if we really had a resilient economy, we would have our own savings to take care of these disasters. We wouldn't have to, you know, be going to the rest of the world to borrow the money. Anyway, I know we've got some calls queuing up here, so let me quickly go to the phones. First, we got Chris in Connecticut. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, Peter. This is Chris. Thank you for taking the call. I have a couple of questions. One is, like, how the slowing U.S. economy will affect James and Jones of U.S. Can we have a comparison with what happened in the Great Depression or what happened in the inflation, which went through the roof in Germany in 1900s?
Is there another question?
Yes. How does gold and silver do compare to foreign investments?
Yeah, okay. Well, basically, in the first place, it's been my belief that the overall global economy is going to prosper as a result of the collapse of the United States. And it's because, the way I look at it, we've been a drag on the global economy because we've consumed too much and borrowed too much, and therefore we've driven up interest rates or driven up costs for consumer goods for the rest of the world. So much of their scarce savings and their scarce production is being used, consumed by 300 million Americans. And if we were not doing that, the rest of the world would enjoy far more capital for investment and far more goods for consumption. So there will be a couple of hiccups. It's hard to say exactly how it will unfold, but I don't think it will take a long time for the boom to begin, much like, we had an economic boom in this country after the end of the Second World War, when we were able to reclaim use of all our resources away from wartime production to peacetime production. When the rest of the world reclaims their resources from satisfying our desires and uses them for their own desires, there is going to be the biggest economic boom this world has seen. And unfortunately, it's going to be a bitter pill for America. We're going to, have to pay the piper. Hopefully, in the long run, we can rejoin global prosperity if we can get our act together. It's not impossible, but it will be difficult for the government to do what needs to be done, which is get the hell out of the way, to come clean, to let the public know that they're not Santa Claus, that we screwed up. We've got to roll up our sleeves and start working. We can start working and producing and saving. And if we can cut taxes and government spending and regulation, maybe my son can grow up in America that's almost as rich as the rest of the world. But if we don't do that, who knows? I mean, maybe we're, the next Argentina. But I think in this environment, gold's going to do well. I mean, I do ultimately expect gold to outperform all foreign currencies, though most of my clients I have invested in the currencies and not in gold, in stocks and dividends, because I believe that the bet on gold is a little risky in case I am wrong. And in the meantime, betting big on gold pays no current income. So for the typical Euro Pacific Capital investor client, I have recommended a more conservative approach so that in the event that my analysis proves to be wrong, I haven't encourage people to significantly bet on an outcome that doesn't materialize. But I think regardless of what happens, right or wrong, foreign investments will outperform American investments. I posted an article on my website today from Jimmy Rogers, and again, he said it's a good article, it's a good interview, you can read it on my website, but he's basically saying that he is getting 100% of his personal wealth out of U.S. dollars. And he's predicting in his article that over the next 10 years, the Chinese currency will quadruple in value. Quadruple. That's increased 400%. And that's exactly what I predicted in an article that I wrote a couple of months ago. And in that scenario, and this is what, they don't bring up, but all by itself, if the Chinese currency quadruples, okay, China's GDP will surpass the GDP of the United States simply on the foreign exchange conversion. So what Jimmy Rogers is actually saying, the same as me, is that within 10 years, the Chinese economy in total will be larger than the American economy. They will be the number one economy in the world, and that's what I've been saying. But anyway, thank you very much for the question, and thanks for listening.
One more thing. Hello?
Yes.
I understand your analysis here, but one question which comes to is, the world economy is interconnected. For example,
let me stop you there. I'm having a hard time understanding you, so I'm assuming that many of my listeners are also having a hard time. So let me just answer the question as best I can and move on, because I've got a lot of people in the queue. The global economies are interconnected. The problem is they're connected in the wrong way. We're a drag on the global economies. It's not a give and take with America right now. It's a take. And, we are contributing less than we take out of the economic pot. So the world is losing on the exchange. So they're going to be better off. But there will be individual losers around the world that are benefiting from this arrangement. But overall, the world is losing from the arrangement, as America is the gainer. It's a parasitic relationship where America is the parasite and the world is the host. And, you know, and it doesn't make me, you know, I'm constantly accused now of being unpatriotic because I point out these problems. You know, it has nothing to do with patriotism. This is reality. You know, and I think that it's in our interest as a nation that this ends sooner rather than later. I know it's going to end eventually. And the sooner it does, the sooner we can begin to rebuild a viable economy. The longer we wait, the worse it's going to get for ourselves. So, yes, I do think that hoping that we have this economic collapse sooner rather than later is really the best thing we can hope for our country. Anyway, let me take another call from Barry in Los Angeles.
Peter, I was wondering if you could comment on the prospects for sugar. It seems to me that sugar hasn't had the same ride as a lot of the other commodities. And
I agree. I think the prospects are pretty sweet.
Well, one of the things, my thesis is that because corn is going up in price, now high fructose corn syrup will be more expensive, so sugar will be able to compete. Sugar will be available as a source of energy, and also the emerging economies will be wealthier and will use more sugar. Do you agree with that?
It's going to be much, much more expensive for Americans to eat. I think over the next several years, the percentage of family income going to food will more than double in this country. People will spend more than twice the percentage of their income on food that they're doing now, maybe even three times the amount. And, of course, the money spent on food cannot be spent on other items. And that's going to be how our standard of living is going to diminish, because it's going to take every penny we earn just to survive life's necessities. And, you know, other people, of course, are going to see their currencies rise, and they're going to see the amount of money they spend on food as a percentage of their income decline.
Is it fair to say, though, that even in other countries, every country that uses a fiat currency, eventually the commodities will rise in price because all the countries will print money?
Well, they will rise in price, but their incomes will rise in price. So you have to rise. So you have to understand that, you know, there's a certain amount of production every year that's going to be, you know, let's just take, steak. You know, there's a bunch of cattle ranches all around the world, and every year there's a certain amount of steaks that are made. And, you know, they're all going to get consumed by somebody. Somebody's going to eat to have those steaks. And right now, you know, if your currency is strong, you're going to be able to eat more steak than people who have a weak currency, because you can outbid them. And so what's going to happen as the dollar continues to fall relative to other currencies, even if all currencies are actually falling in value because of inflation, as the dollar loses value relative to these other countries, then food becomes relatively less expensive for foreigners than Americans. So they're going to get more of it. They're going to get the best of it. You know, so when a cattle rancher in Utah, you know, brings his meat, you know, cattle to slaughter, and he has these steaks, he's got a choice. He can sell them in America, or he can sell them in Europe. He can sell them in South America. He can sell them in Asia. He's going to sell them to whoever can pay him the most money. And, you know, and that's why I constantly remind people that a weak dollar isn't just something that affects you if you travel abroad as a tourist. It affects you right here at home, because it diminishes your purchasing power for everything that you want. The only thing that doesn't diminish is our own wages. So, yes, it's not going to get more expensive for Americans to get haircuts. It's not going to get more expensive for Americans, to go get a massage, because that doesn't require anything but labor. So that's not going to get more expensive. But you want to eat a lobster dinner, you want to have a steak dinner, you want to buy a television set, you know, you want to buy a car, you want to buy oil for, you know, to heat your house or to drill. All that stuff is going to get much, much more expensive.
But would you agree that commodities are safer than other foreign currencies, just because it is possible the currencies will also fall, even though not as much as...
Yes, I think commodities are good investments on their own. I think commodities could rise in terms of other currencies, although I do believe that we could see significant drops in commodity prices in terms of the yuan and some other currencies that could really move up, especially if those governments, you know, get their act together with their monetary policies. But I am interested, you know, I was talking to a broker, and I'm interested, and hopefully I'll get a lot of my Euro Pacific Capital clients in this, to some farmland that I'm going to be looking at down in Uruguay for dairy farming and different things. I want to try to get more direct investments outside the United States into agriculture, into farming. Dairy prices are just going through the roof. I mean, these guys are making a fortune. And, I want to have more investments in agriculture directly outside the United States, and I'm looking for ways to do it right now, and I'm finding some good opportunities around the world.
All right, well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. You're doing terrific.
Thanks. Hey, I may quickly take a break, and I will come back for some more calls at the end of the break.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
And we are back, and I think I'm up. I got somebody's. Okay. Is Ken there from California?
Ahead, which you point out for the financials, would it be wise to invest in an ETF which shorts that sector?
Well, if you want to speculate and you want to short stocks, financials are probably one of the best sectors to short. Short financials, short the home builders, short the insurance companies, both mortgage and, accident casualty, short retailers, any companies that earn their revenue from American consumers and American borrowers are going to go down. I mean, I think that there's no way they can't. But I think, if you're going to have short positions, you not need to offset them with a lot of long positions in foreign assets and commodities, just in case we go through hyperinflation, which could actually send the value of a lot of these stocks up in nominal terms, which would mean you would lose on your shorts. So you got to make sure that you've got the money invested in other things in case hyperinflation happens sooner rather than later.
Jim Rogers said today that he invests in commodities via the Rogers Agricultural Index through ABN. What does that mean?
Well, it's a tracker. But we've got, if you're interested in the Rogers Index, there's a brand, the fund that we originally put our clients into has been closed for years due to the Repco fiasco. But his ex-partner, Jimmy Rogers' ex-partner, set up a new fund that's almost identical to the Rogers fund, but with some slight improvements that I think are very interesting. And we're in the process of signing a selling agreement with that, and we look forward to putting a lot of our clients into this new product, which does exactly what the Rogers Fund used to do, only a little bit better. So if anybody's interested, I mean, definitely talk to a Euro Pacific Capital broker and make sure we get you the information on this new fund.
Dana, this is Ben Stein. Cereal boxes are a great, buying cereals at the grocery store are a great investment right now because some of them contain shares from financial stocks, which are so cheap now. Don't you think it's a good time to buy?
Yeah, that's what he said. He said they were giving them, he says they might as well be putting them in cereal boxes. Well, if I tell you, you got a bad taste in your mouth if you bought any Merrill Lynch.
Peter, funny thing is Ben Stein was on like NPR today saying that he likes to present himself as this sort of defender of free market capitalism. And he was on today talking about how he was protesting the proposed bailouts of the banks and brokerages. He seems a little bit duplicitous, don't you think?
Well, I don't know if he's duplicitous in the fact that these loans were made, but I think, he's clueless about, how bad the problem is. But
it's hard to imagine somebody owning financial stocks who would be protesting these proposed bailouts.
That shows that at least he's got a little bit of integrity, I mean, more than I thought, because he's talking against, if he really does own them, then he's saying something that hurts his own financial position. And I agree, the government should not be looking to bail anybody out, but no one's going to get bailed out, and at least of all, as I said earlier in the show, The homeowners are not the ones that need the bailout. It's the lenders. The homeowners are in fine shape as far as negotiating or renegotiating these loans. They don't need the government to come in and do anything. They've got all the power in the relationship because the assets are not worth anywhere near the mortgages, which means the lenders can't do squat.
Don't you think we'll see a government bailout like the Resolution Trust back in the when the SNLs were going broke about 20 years ago?
With what money? Bailout with what money? You know, are the Chinese and the Saudis going to loan us a couple of trillion dollars so we can have a bailout? I don't think so.
I mean, the President Bush just asked for $200 billion additional for the war in Iraq, and no one seems to be blinking over that.
I'm sure the Chinese are not very happy with the prospect of having to loan us another couple of hundred billion. You know, I mean, that's what we're doing. And, you know, this war in Iraq is already more expensive than Korea or Vietnam. That's how much money we've already spent, and it's not even over.
But, I mean, they just keep asking for more, and Congress just keeps funding it. So why wouldn't
Congress
bail out for the banks?
You're wrong. Congress doesn't fund it. Japan funds it. China funds it. Saudi Arabia funds it. That's who's loaning us the money. Without foreigners lending us the money, we can't do anything. So, and look, and now, you know, of course, we're going to have to borrow money to rebuild these houses in California. You know, obviously the best thing to do would be not to rebuild any of them. Just let some of the people who had their house burned down move into one of the vacant ones. There's a whole bunch of them down there, or some of these foreclosures. But I'm sure what we're going to do is rebuild all these houses, even though we don't need them, because there's so many empty ones.
But, I mean, for a person buying financial stocks, wouldn't they almost have to be buying on the reasoning that there will be some sort of bailout?
There can't be a bailout. How can you bail out if you don't have the money? The only bailout that's possible is massive inflation, and you know, which is no bailout at all. You know, the Federal Reserve just prints all this money. So either way, see, the lenders lose either way. Either they don't get paid back, right? With it, no bailout, lenders don't get paid back. Lenders get back maybe 50 cents on the dollar, 40 cents on the dollar, if there's no bailout. If there is a bailout, then the lenders get paid back in worthless money. And I think in that situation, they could actually get back less. So who cares if they get all their money back if the money they get back has lost 80% of its value? I'd rather get 40% back and have it retain its value. You know?
In that case, isn't it really a more certain thing, shorting the financials than investing into a stock market, which seems a bit frothy at the moment?
Well, I don't invest in a frothy stock market. I think it's a better, sure thing to invest abroad and in commodities and foreign assets than to short U.S. stocks. I think you'll probably make money shorting U.S. stocks, but I think there's more risk doing that than in being long foreign stocks because of the hyperinflation. And if you're short U.S. stocks, you've got to just short the domestic stocks. That's it. You can't short, you know, a Procter & Gamble or, you know, or Coca-Cola. You can't short these stocks that are earning money abroad because they can keep going up. But their real values are actually declining. But when you short something, it doesn't matter about the real value. It's the nominal value that determines whether or not you win or lose.
What do you think of Mark Faber's comments yesterday to the effect that the foreign markets are very overinflated due to the tremendous amounts of money which have gone into them over the last couple of years?
Some of the emerging markets are, and they're going to pull back, and that's why we're cautious on these high-flying stocks, and we recommend the more conservative, yield-oriented stocks that aren't trading at high valuations. But anyway, hey, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, Peter.
Let me quickly move on. I think Nancy in Illinois.
Hello.
Hi, Nancy. How are you?
Fine. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. Given all the spectacular late-day rallies we've seen in the market, I would be interested to hear your opinion on the existence of a plunge protection team or whether the market...
Yeah, I mean, everybody about is there, do the government and the Federal Reserve, do they have some guys that, you know, talk behind the scenes, you know, maybe they have like a hotline, like, you know, the bat phone, and they, you know, they swing into action whenever the market's down and try to bring it back up. I mean, I don't doubt that there's some type of days where brokerage firms might try to act in concert to bid up the market. I don't know. But, you know, regardless, the market's going to go down. And, you know, some of these late-day rallies, so sometimes we have them, but other days, like last week, you know, we have a big late-day sell-off, you know, so sometimes it looks like there's a plunge protection team, and sometimes they're nowhere to be found. But meanwhile, you know, the market is still losing real value. The Dow is now down to about 18 ounces of gold. It's about a new low for the year. You know, it started the year at almost 20 ounces of gold, so that's almost a 10% decline so far this year. And, you know, the market's going to keep on trending lower here. I don't think there could be any big move to new highs, with all these problems, you know, unless we really go into hyperinflation, in which case the real declines will be even more pronounced, even though we might get a little bit of a nominal rise.
Okay, thank you.
Sure thing. And is Sal still online from Connecticut, or did he drop off?
This is Sal.
Hey, Sal, how are you?
How you doing?
Good.
This Pete?
This Peter.
Oh, all right. Let me turn this down. I had that on there. I had two questions for you. Today, Bernanke made like a no comment on the interest rates, whether or not he's going to cut them at the end of the month. I want to know what your opinion on what he's going to do this time, because you said he irresponsibly did it last time by doing that. And
he did. He shouldn't have cut. He should have been raising, you know. But I don't know what he's going to do again. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he did nothing. I wouldn't be surprised if he cut. But I think it's still more likely that he's going to cut again, because I think based on the fact that he already cut 50 basis points, you know, I think he's kind of almost committed to cutting it again, especially since so many people are looking forward to it. And it seems to me that, you know, the Federal Reserve never wants to disappoint the market. They either want to, you know, give the market what it wants or give it something more than it wants. They never want to shock it, or they never want to do something that's going to create a problem that's going to cause the market to go down. And maybe what they do causes it to go down anyway, but they don't want to deliberately do that. And I think if Wall Street is, you know, banking on another 25 basis point cut, if they don't get it, there could be a very bad reaction, and so therefore Bernanke will likely not risk that.
You think it's fear?
Yeah.
And the other question is, I'm a mortgage broker. I've been for quite some time, and I'm around a lot of prominent realtors. And they all have the same line, is it's just a cycle that we'll get through it. You know, I mean, I have somebody that thinks
somebody
like
somebody else said that to me on television, like, oh, it's just like before. There's no precedent for this in U.S. history. This is not just a little cycle. The amount of money that was borrowed and the terms by which it was borrowed has no precedent in U.S. real estate history. Never before have people borrowed $500,000 or $1 million to buy condos with no money of their own in the deal. And never have people borrowed money to pay such inflated prices. And we've never done it at a time where our economy was in such real bad shape fundamentally, where we had no domestic savings to fall back on. And we've never had a real estate market where so many Americans owned real estate, you know, where there's nobody left to buy. And so this, you know, this is unprecedented. You know, what's amazing, I think I mentioned this on the show before, that, you know, economists acknowledge that in the past, every single real estate downturn of this, you know, that they've got real estate recession has led to an overall recession in the economy. They think this is going to be the first time it doesn't happen, which makes no sense, because this is the biggest real estate downturn ever. So if far lesser real estate downturns every time led to a recession, how can the biggest real estate recession ever, you know, how could the economy just shrug it off? It doesn't even, you know, pass the smell test.
Okay. And can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
I read something last week. It said since 1920, before the Great Depression, it's the highest, it's hard for me to say this word, inequality that between the rich and the poor has been before 1920.
Distribution is getting wider and wider and wider.
Yes.
That's because inflation redistributes wealth from the poor and the middle class to the rich, because it's the Wall Street financiers that are getting all this money, and it's the people who have assets, right, who are benefiting. You know, I mean, I'm benefiting dramatically from this inflation because all my foreign assets and commodities and gold stocks are going up. And Wall Street is benefiting from it because they're able to use all this money the Fed creates to make a bunch of profits. But the people who are suffering are the average Americans who don't have any foreign assets, and all they have is their wages and their savings, which are losing value on a daily basis. And they're struggling to buy food and to heat their houses and to make their mortgage payments. That's why, you know, the polls show that half of Americans think we're in a recession, because they are in one.
And in worst case scenario, what would that be like, Peter?
What do you mean?
If that happened like before the 20s and, you know, so many people were rich and so many people were poor, what would society be like?
We're going to have a terrible collapse in our economy. You know, it's going to be terrible. I mean, you know, there's going to be unprecedented economic chaos in this country when, you know, the dollar finally collapses, which it will, and interest rates go up and consumer prices go up and all this stuff. Now, I mentioned, you know, in this economic summit, and I want to talk about that in the last segment and grab these calls. There was an economic summit today on CNBC, which I'm writing about for my commentary, where a bunch of people talked about the economy. You know, the funniest thing was that not a single one of them would talk about the dollar. They all refused. They said, we're not allowed to talk about the dollar. There are only two people allowed to talk about the dollar, the president and the secretary of the treasury, which, I mean, these people are so afraid to even mention the dollar because they're afraid that they might inadvertently cause it to go down. They're so cognizant, they can't even talk. But one of the idiotic things that they said is one of them, and I can't remember which one, said that, well, eventually, they said the Chinese are saving all this money. They save half their income. He said when the Chinese stop saving and start become a consumer-based economy, that that's going to somehow be a positive for America because that's going to mean the Chinese are going to start buying more of our products when they consume more. These guys are clueless. They're not going to buy more of our products. They're going to buy more of their own products. They're just going to buy their own products instead of sending them to us. So what happens in America when China stops consuming is that we're screwed. I mean, when they start consuming, because that means all the products that they used to send us, they keep. And that means all the savings they used to lend us, they spend. So Americans don't have access to their savings. We don't have access to their consumer goods, which means interest rates and prices for consumer goods in this country go through the roof. That's how clueless the president's economic advisors are about the real situation and relationship between America and China. Anyway, thanks for the call.
Thanks for talking to me, Pete.
Take a quick break, and I'll be back for the last three phone calls, so let's take no more because I don't think I'll have time to get to any more.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back, and I've got a few more callers on hold. So let me go back to the phones, and I've got Justin in Indiana. Go ahead, Justin.
Hey, Peter. I was wondering what you think about some of these major gold producers and how they're having problems producing gold, I guess.
Well, they are having problems because inflation has driven the cost of mining up so dramatically relative to what's happened to the price of gold. The problems for the gold mining sector are going to be solved when gold prices really take off and achieve the level that they need to be at or they should be at based on the fundamentals. So I think once gold is, you know, a couple of $1,000 an ounce, which you can get to pretty quickly, you're going to see a whole different situation in the mining community. They're not going to have any problems profitably mining gold because they're going to be able to get enough money for the metals. But right now, it's, you know, I've mentioned this before, that it's very ironic that gold miners are some of the biggest victims of inflation when you would think that they would be one of the biggest benefactors. It's just because inflation is so underappreciated by the rest of the world that even as inflation drives up the cost of mining, it's not driving up the price of gold as fast.
Right. And I think, like Freeport-McMoRan said today, that they're going to produce like 900,000 less ounces next year. So, I mean, you know, I think the fact that they're having problems even pulling ore out of the ground right now is saying that it's going to drive the price even higher because, I mean, there's
going to. But remember, what's going to happen ultimately as gold prices go up, I'm sure Freeport-McMoRan has a lot of resources that are now being devoted towards mining other minerals, you know, minerals or metals that might be more profitable. you know, whether they take resources that could have gone to gold production and instead it goes to iron production or zinc or lead production or copper or whatever. But if the price of gold rises high enough, more and more of the resources of these mining companies will be switched into the production of gold.
Right.
And
no,
it's,
no.
So it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah, they'll finally start meeting the, you know, there'll be a lot more demand for gold, so they'll meet that demand eventually.
Yeah, but it's going to be met at much, much higher prices. It's not that they're going to meet it and it's going to kill the market. No, no, no. The market's going up. I mean, I'm convinced, you know, just like at one point in history, everybody in the world owned gold. Gold was everybody's money. And right now, you know, hardly anybody owns it. And I think all of a sudden they're going to realize that they need to have it.
Yeah, I'm totally on the same page with you. Did you see what Jim Rogers said today about the Federal Reserve?
What did he say?
He said it's the official policy of the central bank and the U.S. to debase the currency.
Yeah, I read that in the interview that I put on my website. Yeah, he goes, that's our official policy. Of course, that is the policy. That's the bailout. That's how they hope to make everything okay, by making the dollar go down. They just can't officially say it because then it would really collapse. And for some reason, the government officials seem to think that it's okay if the dollar goes down as long as it does it in a gradual manner. Which makes no sense to me. It's like, yes, you're going to go broke, but don't worry, because it's going to happen slowly.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
All right, well, Justin, thanks for the call.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, let's take David. Are you calling from China?
That's right. I'm in Guangzhou, China, Peter.
Oh, well, good morning over there, I guess. I guess it's morning, right?
That is. It's about 8:40 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted.
That's exactly 12 hours difference over there. That's right.
Yeah. Your new format here is coming in loud and clear in China, and hopefully it'll make a difference in your programs from now on.
Oh, you know what? You know, since I was in the process of trying to find another vendor for this, I would appreciate some feedback from people who have been sending me emails complaining about the ability to listen to this streaming audio. To see if they can give me some feedback to see if there is a meaningful improvement in the quality of the broadcast through this format.
Well, this seems to be the best it's been in a long, long, long time. So I'm glad they made the change. Hopefully they'll be able to get the archives out quicker, too. But I think a lot of these business shows, like you said, the people that go crazy, the gods first drive mad. I think that's what's happening right now.
I know. I mentioned that in my book, and I said we must surely be on the eve of our destruction because we're clearly a nation gone completely mad.
Right. All right. That's all I have for you. I just wanted to let you know that you're...
All right. Thanks. Well, I appreciate it. What are you doing out there in China?
I flew out here. I just go back tomorrow to Tokyo and spend a few more days over here in Asia, but... That's a good ride, and the weather's pretty nice right now.
All right, well, great. Thanks for the call.
All right.
Yeah, you know, if anybody, there's a lot of stuff that's happening now, you know, that's been written about or I predicted in my book. You know, it's interesting as more and more of the stuff that I forecast comes true. You know, I think it makes the book even more, popular, or should make it more appealing today than it was when it first came out. Because when it first came out, everything was a forecast, although actually by the time it first came out even, some of the forecasts were coming true because the book had been written, you know, mostly some 6 months prior to that. But I think now it should have a lot more credibility in light of what's happened. So the book should be selling even better. We just, you know, got to get it out in the stores. You know, people, if you know, need to buy more copies, you know, go make a point. You know, if you walk by a bookstore, ask them if they have my book. Say, do you have Crash Proof by Peter Schiff? And, you know, call up these shows. I've said this before. I don't know if anyone's ever done it. If anyone does it, I wish they'd send me an email, let me know. But call up other popular talk shows, AM talk shows, that discuss politics and economics and investments, and bring up my book. Bring up how accurate the forecasts have been, how accurate the investment advice is, how interesting the reading was, and try to start discussing it in a way that will generate some kind of buzz so that people will start buying it, and my ideas can get disseminated to a wider audience, which I think is extremely important that we achieve that. Anyway, let me go to Jim in Kentucky. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, Pete.
Hey.
Hey, a couple of points here for you. I've been keeping up with your archives and all your news footage. One of my biggest things here I've seen, I guess you just posted, the Charles on the Fox Business.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, this guy's got a serious disconnect from reality. I don't know where he lives, but it's not in the United States.
Well, a lot of these guys do. I remember these guys, and it was funny. I was trying to describe to him, you know, he said on this most recent show, he said, you know, Americans, we have the highest standard of living in our history, that we were living better than any Americans before us ever had. And I try to say, wait a minute here, you don't know what you're talking about. I described my grandfather. I said my grandfather was a carpenter, and, you know, he raised seven children, and his wife never had a job outside the house. They owned a home. They had a housekeeper. They had a vacation house. And the kids went to school without borrowing money. And the guy said, yeah, sure. He said, of course, your grandfather was a wealthy man. I said, no, you missed what I'm saying. He wasn't a wealthy man. He was a carpenter. He was a laborer. He was lower middle class.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
I have clients. I had a client talk to me about, you know, yes, my father was a mailman and my mother didn't work. I mean, you know, people just, they just don't understand. Because of the debasement of our currency and because of the increase in taxes, the American middle class is not as well off as they once were. And the only reason we're able to get by, even, is because we have all this debt, which we didn't have in the 1950s and 1960s.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
And all this shit. Yes, we have two cars. Yes, we have flat-screen TVs and iPods. But we have all this debt because we bought it with borrowed money.
I know. Wake up, America. That's crazy. Hey, one of my other points is I'm noticing a lot of disguising of inflation, especially at the grocery stores, restaurants, things like that. You're getting you're paying the same price and even more for smaller portions of things.
Yeah, I joked. I went and I got a box of cereal, and from my son and I each had two bowls. And the whole box was gone. It was a huge box, but we got four bowls out of a huge box of cereal. You know, another example, just in the airplane ride that I took, you can see the hidden costs. You know, I flew it's almost like a 2.5 hour, almost 3 hour flight down to New Orleans. And I booked it through a ticket agent, through a travel agent. Now, in the past, a few years ago, whenever you booked a ticket through a travel agent, it didn't cost anything. But this cost me $35. Why do I have to pay? Because the airlines no longer reimburse the travel agents, so now we have to pay it. That doesn't show up in higher costs for airfare, but it's there. It's a hidden cost. When I checked my luggage, they wanted me to pay an extra $50 because my bag weighed 54 pounds. Now, the old limit used to be 70 pounds, but now it's I was able to take something out of my bag and stick it in my carry-on, and I was able to avoid that charge. But again, you know, having those lower weights, and of course, I flew almost a three-hour flight, and I didn't even get a meal, not even like a snack. And of course, you know, I mean, I've flown in planes. I took a domestic air flight, you know, in Thailand last year for 1 hour, and they served me a delicious meal in coach for a one-hour flight. And on the way back, the flight was about 20 minutes late, so they broke out meals and they served us great meals while we were waiting for the plane and drinks for free.
The good old days.
And this was in coach in a third world country, right?
doing things right, the right way. Hey, one other.
So much. There's such a big decline in service, and there's all sorts of ways that costs are being increased that aren't even showing up in the numbers that they're lying about in the first place. I mean, I'm convinced that the inflation that we are living with right now is as bad as anything that was experienced during the 1970s.
I definitely concur with that. Hey, one other point. I heard today they passed this 401k law where it's mandatory or whatever that all employers put their employees in a 401k automatically unless they opt out. Did you hear anything about that?
I knew I talked about that on Fox. I'm not sure. Well, but if they can opt out, basically what they're doing is that they're simply making the default option in rather than out, I guess, something like that. So, I mean, it really doesn't mean anything that, you know, if the employees can say, I don't want it. So I don't know what they've accomplished.
I was wondering if that's just a way the government's trying to help prop up the stock market and maybe help.
Anything that they don't want it. They want people spending, you know. But, you know, if the government is really trying to help us save, which would be an admirable goal, the first thing you should do is stop punishing people for saving, which means stop creating inflation. Ben Bernanke should raise interest rates, They should stop this money printing, and they should start encouraging savings and discouraging borrowing. What they're doing, what the government's been doing, is the opposite. It encourages reckless borrowing and consumption and punishes people who save. You have to be an idiot if you save in this country. Now, if you're going to save, yes, do it, but not in dollars. You have to save in foreign currencies. Otherwise, you're going to lose. And if you save in foreign currencies, it doesn't really help our economy. Unfortunately, it helps the economies of the other countries where we're saving. But, you know, in the long run, I think it'll help our economy because Americans can bring that money back. But in the short run, you know, the money that we're putting in foreign currencies doesn't help our economy. But that's the only thing we can do. Otherwise, it's going to be flushed down the toilet.
Exactly. It's going to evaporate, just like everybody's home equity. Maybe that's how they're going to control inflation, just let it dissipate.
It's not going to dissipate. It's just going to get worse. It's like these California fires. It's 0% contained, and it's going to ravage the whole nation.
A wildfire. Hey, one quick other point. I was watching a show Jim Rogers was on, and he actually called the people in the White House clowns. He's like, these clowns in the White House, just really, they have no clue.
That's what they're doing. That's what they are.
Yeah, sure. I agree. I won't keep you anymore, but I do appreciate everything, your message. Your message is getting out there, and hopefully Ron Paul will step up. He's gaining some popularity here. And
Ron's more popular, too. You know, I was on Fox the other day, and Ron was on before me. So, you know, he's getting on there, and, you know, I wish him well. And as I said before, you know, people, you know, send him some money. I mean, it's not so much just to support him, but send him a check. Send him $2,300. Get your friends to send him the money, you know, because it's going to be worthless anyway, so you might as well send it to Ron so he can spend it. And I know he's not really spending it. I guess he's banking a lot of this cash. My thinking is he's going to spend a lot of it, you know, in New Hampshire and to try to really raise his profile. If he can come into New Hampshire with a ton of money and then do an advertising blitz, he can win New Hampshire. It's not impossible. Pat Buchanan won New Hampshire.
I hope he does. I really hope he does. As a matter of fact, I just mailed him off a check.
I'd be willing to go to New Hampshire, you know, when it comes to that time, and I'd be willing to help him for a couple of weeks, just give some speeches for him, do some stuff in public to help raise his profile in New Hampshire. I would encourage, you know, people to come, you know, maybe supporters to travel out to New Hampshire and spend some time there, you know, ringing doorbells and doing the stuff that it takes. Because that's all the media seems to pay attention to. You know, they don't pay attention to these internet polls. But if Ron Paul can win New Hampshire, you know, then I think, you know, they'd have to take him seriously.
We'll get some attention, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I appreciate it, Peter. Keep up the good work. I'll keep listening.
Thank you. All right, so we're just running up to our last few minutes. Again, I want to thank everybody for listening. Hopefully this was a better experience with this new format that they have. They didn't even tell me that they had adopted it. I had noticed it myself for the first time when I went on the website. But this, you know, the week ahead promises to be another big one. You know, gold prices to me look like they're really ready to head a lot higher. The gold stocks have broken out. They look like they're going up. The dollar is broken down. We've had a lot of volatility, a couple of big gap ups and gap downs. But to me, that looks like we're going lower. You know, I hear a lot of people trying to make a contrarian argument now that there's too many dollar bears, that too many people think the dollar could go down. You know, I had a, you know, argument with Robert Prechter, who's otherwise a very bright guy, and we agree on most things. And other people, this guy Michael Panzer, who wrote this other book. I mean, these guys are saying that they think in the short run, the dollar is going to rise because there's so many people long foreign currencies and long commodities. But, you know, I just can't fathom that happening. It just doesn't make any sense to me that with all the problems emanating from this country and from America and with our monetary policy, that the result, that a massive collapse resulting from problems in America would cause the rest of the world to want to buy our currency. It just makes no sense whatsoever. And is it possible that these guys could be right and there could be a temporary 5 or 10% bounce in the dollar? Maybe, but I think that bounce would be very short-lived, and I don't think it's worth trying to finesse this thing by trying to prepare to trade into it, because I think it's just as likely or more likely that we just go straight down. And even if it does bounce, there's a good chance that you won't be able to get out of it in time, and the bottom will drop out of the dollar before you have a chance to reestablish your foreign position. Now, I've used the analogy, you know, you're in a lifeboat on the Titanic, and they're lowering it down, and all of a sudden you hear a song from the band, and you say, wait a minute, I want to get back on, I want to dance this last song, and get back on the life raft. You don't do that. You don't take a chance that you get back on when the ship is sinking. You sit where you are. And that's what you do, and if you're still on the ship, you don't wait for that last song, you get into a life raft as soon as you can. So if you're still holding U.S. dollars, don't wait, get rid of them. You know, call us up at Euro Pacific Capital, talk to a broker. You got to get your accounts open. You got to get your money in the account so we can get out of the dollar and get you some real assets and preserve your wealth. Again, thanks everybody for listening. I will be here again next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific at www.europac.net.